This is Radio Superior 1950, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the land of beautiful lakes. Jack McKenna speaking. It's Wednesday, November 8th, 1950. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news. George G. Newton of George G. Newton Realty has the latest on the housing crisis. The labor guy, Jay Fisher, is in, presumably to cry over yesterday's election. And we have great music just for you. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Stax Appliance Center with something new, a portable radio. It's no bigger than a typewriter, folks, for just $32.50. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jake, and good listeners. The GOPs have smashed the Truman leadership as Republicans gain power in congressional elections and the Allies blast North Korea. We begin our world report from Seoul.
Hello, this is Max Jordan at Allied headquarters in Seoul. 600 Allied warplanes blasted North Korea all along the Manchurian border today to block reinforcements from Red China. Air observers report very heavy traffic rolling across Manchuria toward the Yalu River boundary. They spotted 700 vehicles already south of the Yalu in North Korea. As the UN Air Arm mounted one of the largest raids of the Korean War, reinforcements arrived on the Korean East Coast. Elements of the U.S. 3rd Infantry Division landed at the port of Wonsan. On the ground, UN troops push forward on all fronts while the unexplained communist withdrawal continues. Intelligence officers at General MacArthur's Tokyo headquarters clamped a surprise news blackout on developments between communist battle lines and the Manchurian border. They say the clampdown is temporary. They declined to answer questions about the Reds' ultimate intentions, whether the communists are planning an attack, trying to consolidate present lines, or preparing a series of delaying actions. In an historic sidelight to the air war, jet met jet in a fight to the death for the first time. The battle occurred over the North Korean border city of Sinuiju, a key target for the 60-plane assault. An American F-80 shooting star jet shot down a Russian-made MiG-15 jet fighter while the plane sped at better than 600 miles per hour. Another Red jet was damaged but escaped to Manchuria. Pilots say the Red jets tried to lure them across the border over Manchuria, a new tactic. UN planes have been ordered to stay clear of Chinese communist airspace. In Seoul, this is Max Jordan reporting.
This is Washington, Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. Democrats held on to a shaky control of Congress today after Republicans mowed down Senate administration leaders in a stunning vote assault on President Truman's policies. So strong is the GOP comeback from the 1948 presidential year defeat that when the new Senate meets in January, it will line up with 49 Democrats and 47 Republicans. The Senate division is the closest since 1930. In an anti-Truman administration phalanx, Republican opponents bowled over their Democrats. Senate leader Scott Lucas of Illinois lost to Everett Dirksen in a sweep that saw only one GOP senator defeated. The GOP victories, which includes the re-election of Mr. Republican, Senator Robert Taft of Ohio, were variously attributed to the adverse turn of the Korean War, criticism of the president's foreign policy decisions, opposition to his domestic fair deal program, and reaction to communists and government charges. Along with Lucas and Myers, veteran Democratic Senator Millard Tidings of Maryland and Albert Thomas of Utah went down to defeat before Republican opponents. Other seats which had been filled by Democrats were won by Republicans. Herman Welker in Idaho and Representative Richard M. Nixon in California. Nixon beat Representative Helen Gehagan Douglas, recently praised by President Truman for her support of his foreign policy. Governor Thomas Dewey of New York won a third term by big majority. He leads a parade of Republicans capturing governor's offices. Representative Franklin Roosevelt Jr. won re-election to the House in New York, but his brother James Roosevelt was defeated by Republican Governor Earl Warren of California in the latter's bid for a third term. Republican National Chairman Guy Gabrielson hailed the GOP victories as a sign that, quoting, the voters are opposed to appeasement of communism, whether at home or abroad, and are opposed to socialism in free America, unquote. Dewey's substantial victory in his third-term race in New York keeps him in position to control that state's big delegation to the 1952 GOP nominating convention. Dewey said repeatedly during the campaign that he doesn't regard himself as a possibility for the nomination. He proposes General Dwight D. Eisenhower as the nominee. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson reporting.
Columnist Drew Pearson here in the nation's capital. Now that the elections are over, President Truman is considering important cabinet changes. He will also be faced with important vacancies on the Supreme Court. As a result, he is contemplating the most sensational shift he has made since he eased out various Roosevelt cabinet members right after FDR's death. The double play between the cabinet and the Supreme Court involves Secretary of State Dean Acheson, who I predict will resign. Then Chief Justice Fred Vinson will take Acheson's place. Justice Felix Frankfurter will resign. Acheson will then be appointed to his Supreme Court seat. And I expect Justice William O. Douglas to resign, probably to replace General Eisenhower as president of Columbia University. Truman is more fond of Acheson personally than of anyone else in the cabinet except Secretary of Defense George Marshall. He has told friends that history will show Acheson to be one of our greatest secretaries of state. However, he also fears that Acheson, because of his defense of Alger Hiss, will never be able to regain public confidence. Furthermore, Acheson, physically exhausted, has wanted to resign. In Washington, this is your reporter, Drew Pearson, speaking.
KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this message from Stack's Appliance Store.
Stack's new Head of the Lakes Philco dealer. Philco three-way portable radio tops in beauty and performance. I suppose you'd figure, well, a new Philco portable would easily sell for $75. No chance, folks. No chance at all. Just $32.50, and you can take it wherever you go. It's no bigger than a typewriter. It's got a very convenient handle for you to carry it with. Take it, folks. You can go wherever you want to go. Stack's Appliance Center, your new Head of the Lakes Philco dealer. I thank you. Blue?
All of the state's contests were won by Republicans in yesterday's election. Capitol reporter John Powell has the news.
Walter J. Kohler, Jr., whose late father served as the state chief executive 20 years ago, will be the next governor of Wisconsin. He, like his father, is a Republican. The 46-year-old Kohler defeated 36-year-old Carl Thompson of Stoughton, a lawyer and the Democratic Party's national committeeman. Alexander Wiley of Chippewa Falls, who has served as a Republican senator from Wisconsin since 1939, was re-elected to that office over Democratic Attorney General Thomas Fairchild. It was Kohler's first bid for public office and fulfilled a decision he made 5 years ago while serving in the Navy to return home and become active in public life. He's of the family that founded the Kohler plumbing fixture business. Kohler and the 66-year-old Wiley won by large majorities. They won by piling up margins of approximately 100,000 votes each outstate that held up despite a plurality for the Democratic candidates in Milwaukee County. Indications are that the Democratic total vote will be larger than what was polled in 1948 for the gubernatorial race. At that time, Governor Rennebaum, who did not run for re-election, defeated Thompson by 116,000 votes. Re-elected were Lieutenant Governor George M. Smith, Secretary of State Fred Zimmerman, and State Treasurer Warren Smith. In Madison, this is John Powell reporting.
Bucking some statewide Republican trends, Superior backed some Democrats in the general election. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the news.
Alvin E. Okonski of Mercer was reelected 10th District Congressman on the Republican ticket, defeating Democratic opponent Rodney Edwards of Superior by a margin of more than 11,000 votes. Okonski carried 12 of the 14 counties, losing in Douglas County, Edwards' home, and his own home county of Iron. Arthur A. Lenroot, Jr. of Superior was reelected state senator of the 11th District on the Republican ticket, did in Tuesday's election. He defeated Washburn Democrat Elizabeth Hawks by 5,470 votes. Lenroot carried all four counties in his district, including Bayfield, Burnett, Douglas, and Washburn counties. He piled up his biggest vote in his home county of Douglas. Two Republican incumbents have been returned to office in the race in Douglas County for state assembly. Bryn Ospey won in the first district against Democratic opponent James Strong. In the second district, Charles Nelson easily defeated John Tykola, his Democratic opposition. For the first time in 34 years, a Democrat was elected to an office in Douglas County. The Democratic winner was John H. Chisholm, who defeated Republican Clarence O. Gradeen for district attorney by a margin of 270 votes. Not since 1898 had a Democrat been elected DA in Douglas County. In that year, voters put Isaac Ross into the district attorney's chair. The last Democrat to hold any county office was George Comiskey, who was elected sheriff in 1916. Another close race was for sheriff. Republican Elton Eckroth defeated Democrat Arthur Stack by 306 votes. Eckroth is the present undersheriff and was sheriff for two successive terms before that. City Clerk Emmett McKegg says that there were more than 13,000 votes cast. Lou?
In an important 8th congressional district race in Duluth and Minnesota's Iron Range, Democratic Farmer Labor Party incumbent John Blotnick defeated Republican William Pittenger by several thousand votes. For the first time since 1910, Washburn County voters elected a Democratic sheriff. Lawrence Stegman defeated undersheriff and former sheriff Floyd Bannister. In Ashland County, former Sheriff Frank Harris beat Democrat Lester Gallagher by a 3-1 margin. Assemblyman Barney Gehrman of Mellon won another term. He defeated Democrat Emmett Sullivan of Ashland. In Bayfield County, all Republicans were reelected by 2-1 or 3-1 margins. District Attorney Walter Norland had no opposition. Sheriff Joseph DeMars won re-election over John Gesdick of Keystone, and Coroner Elwin Bratley was returned to office. And finally, Jack, this in from Balsam Lake, that's in Polk County. A woman has been elected sheriff. Mrs. Catherine Moore emerged triumphant over Democrat Edwin Lewick. Mrs. Moore will succeed her husband, who by state term limits could not run for a third term. This is the second time that she has replaced her husband. Mrs. Moore also won the sheriff's race in 1940, Jack.
Does this mean she'll get to wear the pants in the family? Thanks, newsman Lou Martin.
Who is glad the elections are over and done with.
Hang in there, old buddy. Let's look at the forecast for this Wednesday evening, November 8th, 1950. Snow, wind, and turning colder tonight, folks, with a low of 15. Expect a high tomorrow of just 38 degrees. And it's music time. Here's a new one called Holiday for Strings by David Rose and his orchestra on the Martin and McKenna Glad Those Elections Are Done show. David Rose and his orchestra, and Holiday for Strings on KUWS. Folks, the 7th Street Supermarket has some great, tasty, and inexpensive food on its shelves, just waiting for you. How about mincemeat, for example? Just 29 cents per pound. Or potato sausage, also 29 cents a pound. Beef stew, 69 cents a pound. And chicken livers, Lou, at 39 cents a pound. Braunschweiger liver sausage, Lou's favorite, 45 cents per pound. And fresh from our own Lake Superior, 7th Street Supermarket has fish. Herring at just 11 cents a pound. Of course, you'll have to clean them. Walleye pike, 45 cents a pound. And smoked Cisco, I didn't know they could smoke, 59 cents a pound. Dial 77-417741 for delivery at the 7th Street Supermarket, where there's always easy parking. And the Labor Guy is up next. Let's enjoy the music of Art Mooney on the Martin and McKenna Show. Mooney, and I'm looking over a four-leaf clover.
Let me introduce Superior Federation of Labor editor, Jay Fisher. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, evening back at you, Lou. At least you know my name. That McKenna fella keeps calling me the Labor Guy. Maybe I should start wearing purple tights and a cape with a big letter L on my chest, eh, Mac?
I know I'm in trouble when someone calls me Mac. No offense, Mr. Fisher.
None taken, really. We're just in a sour mood down at the Labor Temple today. I mean to tell you, we got our lights knocked out by the Republicans yesterday. I can't understand how a working man and woman can stand by and let Republicans win elections. Go figure.
But you're here to talk about some important projects that unions are pushing.
Pushing? Pushing? I mean to tell you, mister, labor isn't pushy except when it comes to standing up for the rights of working men and women alike. Then, by golly, I mean to tell you, we'll push.
Let's forget I said push. How about those projects?
Well, first, we're pushing to get rid of the toll bridges between Superior and Duluth. We've got a couple of good spans connecting the Twin Ports, the Arrowhead Bridge in West Duluth, and the Interstate Bridge to Central Superior. These are the only two toll bridges connecting Wisconsin and Minnesota. Brother, toll bridges are dodo birds. Tolls add up to plenty for the average Jane and Joe. They're bad news for commerce, bad advertising for both cities, and I mean to tell you, it's time for them to go. Hey, Lou, Jack, everyone. The Middle River Tuberculosis Sanitarium is full. All 104 beds are taken. But the good news is that these people are getting help, and they might not have even known they had TB, excepting for the mobile X-ray unit Douglas County's got. The mobile X-ray truck has taken 52,000 pictures of people's lungs over the past few years, making early detection so as people are not to be past help by the time they come in to the SAN. I'm here to tell you, unions are joining the good doctors and nurses to stamp out TB, but the mobile X-ray unit doesn't operate on air.
They need electricity and stuff.
Right you are, Mac. That's why we're asking every labor brother and sister to chip in $2 to the Christmas Seal TB campaign.
He's still mad at me.
How do you know that?
I'm still Mac.
Forget about it, Mac. You cough up a couple of bucks, and I'll call it square.
He hesitates.
It's like he's frozen or something.
He gets like that when he tries to think hard.
Here you go. The Christmas Seals are a great campaign. Good luck, Brother Jay.
Could have used some of that luck at yesterday's elections, pal.
This one's for the Superior Federation of Labor and all you Democrats out there. Here's Guy Mitchell and Singing the Blues on the Martin and McKenna Buy Your Seals and End the Toll Bridges show. Mitchell, he's singing the blues.
Now it's time for George G. Newton of George G. Newton
now
Company.
Now stop right there. I am not George G. Newton with George G. Newton Realty today. I may not be that guy anymore.
But you look like George G. Newton.
Maybe this is Herb B. Newton, his sinister brother.
Brother Herb Newton. Jack boy. What an imagination. What a sense of humor.
Those are questions I've often asked myself about him.
And Lou, such a kidder. Hey, but it's true. I'm still George G. Newton, but I'm thinking about getting out of the real estate biz. Seems like I've been in it for 100 years.
You probably sold your first house to the museum curator. I think he was the first white man in this neck of the woods.
Hey, how about those elections, eh, guys? The Dems sure took a drubbing, didn't they? And let me tell you, that's not good. It's not good.
So, George, if not real estate, what brings you by?
Good question, Lou. Good question. You're an inquisitive newsman. You're a credit to your profession. Hey, but back to those elections. Man, the way I figure it, General MacArthur beat Truman. I mean, neither were running for office, but Mac beat him anyway.
Hmm. That's interesting.
In an off-the-topic kind of way.
No. Look, just last week, the president had everyone's sympathy after those Puerto Rican nationalists tried to kill him. I thought, George, Truman's got everyone's sympathy. Oh, boy, was I wrong.
Why, George.
I mean, Mac turned the tables on the president. On the day before the election, he tells the UN guard and everybody that Red China's in the Korean War. Bingo, bang, the war's going bad, the scare tactics of Senator McCarthy about communists in the government comes together, and it's like a 1-2 Joe Lewis combination. Bam, Democrats take it on the chin. Trouble is, since this scare stuff is working, it means we're going to get a dose of it from now on.
So, George, what's next? For you, I mean.
Who knows? I mean, sure, I mean, I can pitch a duplex, 7 rooms downstairs, 8 rooms up, 2 heating plants, full basement, centrally located at 1127 Tower Avenue, just $4,700. Yeah, or like a 6-room house, 4 rooms downstairs, 2 bedrooms up, new roof, new chimney, 161 Cummins Avenue. I mean, how hard is that to pitch good deals?
No doubt about it, George. You're the second best pitch man in the biz.
I move aside only for you, Jack boy.
It must be music time now or something.
Right. And we've got an important announcement coming up, too. Here's something just for Georgie in his new career. This is Johnny Mercer and Personality on the Martin and McKenna Show.
When Madame Pompadour was on a ballroom floor, said all the gentlemen, obviously, the madam has the cutest personality. And think of all the books about Du Barry's looks. What was it made of? The toast of Paris. She had a well-developed personality.
What did Romeo see in Juliet, or Pierrot in Pierrette, or Jupiter in Juno?
You know. And when Salome danced and had the boys entranced, no doubt it must have been easy to see that she knew how to use her personality. Certain things like sable coats and wedding rings by men who wear their spats right.
That's right. So don't you say I'm smart and have the kindest heart. Oh, what a wonderful sister I'd be.
Just tell me how you like my
rough personality.
Baby, you've got the cutest
personality.
Johnny Mercer and Personality on station KUWS. The labor guy is back with some big news.
The name's Fisher, remember?
Jay Fisher, editor, Superior Federation of Labor. Got it.
All right, then. Our brothers at the City Fire Hall are asking you all to chip in to help the kids this holiday. I mean to tell you, they've been doing this for years, and it always tugs at the strings of my heart. Bring your repairable toys to the 6th Street Fire Hall, and they'll fix them up for needy children this Christmas.
Oh, that's such a good cause. Make a child happy during the holidays when cheer is abundant, glad tidings abound, and want is felt so keenly by those less fortunate.
My guess is that one person has a gold mine of broken toys that could help lots of kids if that one person would only clean out his closets and attic.
Who are we talking about here?
Yeah, who?
If this one person could only part with his broken toys.
You mean parting with memories of playful bliss, of toy trains and trucks and toy soldiers.
Don't forget your official cowboy gun slinging set.
Mac has a bunch of toys lying around? What good are they for you now?
A man is never too old for toys.
I knew it. Jet Boy is a rank sentimentalist.
He also has a knack for breaking toys.
And I'm not rank. I like to see what makes him work, that's all. Sometimes a piece will fall off or snap or, it's not my fault.
Hey, Mac, need any help getting those toys to the fire hall?
How many people are down at the labor temple?
Depends. Probably 30 or 40.
Might not be enough. Jack broke lots of toys over the years.
Kind of destructive when he was a kid. Eh, Lou?
Kid? He's no less destructive now. Now that he wears long pants.
Lou won't buy me toys for Christmas. He gets me scarves. All right, let's go to the McKenna household and gather some broken but beloved toys. Won't Mom be surprised?
I'm going to stop by the grocery store and get cardboard boxes.
Lots and lots of boxes.
I'll call the labor temple. The guys would love to chip in.
That's it, folks. And kids, you'd better appreciate Jack the Mac, because these are great toys coming your way. Stay tuned for Lowell Thomas with the news, Space Patrol, and Name That Band. We'll be back, same time, same place, that's a warning, on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and they don't take my Roger Rocket special space radio, folks. For Lou Martin, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
Roger Rocket space radio?
He says that he can talk to Martians with that thing.
You mean when he was a kid he'd say that?
No, I think he mentioned that he talked to him last night.
Oh, boy.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1950, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Al Katz, John Munson, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1950 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.